Hello, today is Thursday, June 4th. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and we're going to start off with part one of the pantograph. The bright side, kids explore the animal kingdom. Animal Crackers nurtures love of nature at Bloomington Normal Zoo by D. Jack Alkire, 2 hours ago. Miller Park Zoo Education Manager Julia Benzel is holding Almond, a domestic rat, on Tuesday, June the 2nd of 2026, during a session of Animal Crackers, an early childhood education program at the zoo. She's holding the rat and all the kids are sitting around looking at it. The bright side, Bloomington. After a group story time, but before snack time, Julia Benzel watched this week as her young students screwed up their courage and reached out to connect with the wildlife. About a dozen small children sat on the floor with their parents and guardians Tuesday morning as Jeff Bacon, educator with Miller Park Zoo, introduced them to a shumi, a lesser hedgehog, Tenric, that almost fit in the palm of his hand. Even though some of the little ones were hesitant initially, each one eventually held out their pointer finger and petted the tiny mammal along its back. "I feel like their biggest cheerleader in that moment," said Benzel, the zoo's education manager. "They get so brave to do it and usually light up afterwards. They're so excited." Tuesday was the first of this year's Animal Crackers educational sessions that introduced kids aged 3 to 5 to wildlife at Miller Park Zoo. The program looks like many other early childhood classes with a storybook reading, craft time, snacks, and reminders to sit crisscross applesauce, but the exceptional part is when the students get to reach out and touch a part of a natural world that they may not otherwise experience. "We really liked the animals the most. I think that was the very best part," said Camille Wolf of Minier. She brought her 3-year-old daughter Heidi to her first Animal Crackers experience. "She just really enjoyed that," Wolf said. "And she didn't have any fear touching them, which really surprised me because she's very shy." Animal Crackers runs from Tuesday through Thursday in the first week of June, July, and August this summer, with 2 sessions each day. Each month focuses on a different animal group. Families can sign up online at tinyurl.com/Miller Park Zoo Education or by calling 309-434-2250. Once again, families can sign up online at tinyurl.com/Miller Park Zoo Education or by calling 309-434-2250. Hands-on learning. The topic of June's classes was mammals. Benzel read a book about mammals, pointing out the characteristics of mammals like hair, live births, and warm-blooded bodies. It's showing them the natural world. It's teaching them about adaptions. It's teaching them about what's in their backyard and across the rest of the world. But it's also showing them what we do here at the zoo, Benzel said. After Bacon returned to Ishumi to its lodging, he said he and Benzel brought out 2 more friends for the students to meet, 2 domestic rats named Almond and Peanut. After the animal friends went back to their homes, the children washed their hands and had snacks while crafting their own mammalian puppets to take home with them. Then they were all allowed to head out into the zoo. "A lot of kids have never touched an animal before," Bacon said. "They may have a dog or cat, but they've never touched a turtle. They've never touched a snake, or they've never touched a lizard, and they're afraid of them." The zoo offers Animal Crackers to its youngest learners, but several programs are offered throughout the year for a variety of ages, Benzel said. "We have programs for 3 to 17-year-olds that are based on animals and the environment, and we try new things every year," she said. Getting kids involved and invested in the natural world, especially important in the digital age, said Eli Sharping. He drove up from Champaign with his 3-year-old son, Miles, for their first Animal Cracker session. "It's nice to get out there, get outside, get hands-on, and see animals close and personal. It's not just on a screen or something like that," he said. Miles really enjoyed meeting and petting Peanut, a rather hairless rat, he noted. "The chance to meet an animal like Peanut is unique in the 21st century," Benzel said. "A lot of things are online now, and they're virtual. They're seeing them on a screen," she said. "We don't do that here. You're seeing animals in person. You're touching them. You're learning about endangered species. We think it's important to just get them immersed in this world because it's not their day-to-day life." teamwork. Bacon started volunteering at the zoo during the COVID-19 pandemic and is now a part-time educator working with Benzel. He brings a wealth of experience in professional education with him as Bradley University professor with a master's degree and doctorate in special education. But he'd much rather be teaching at the zoo, he said. I would do this full-time, really, Bacon said. Keeping kids engaged in the learning process requires positive reinforcement. The quickest way to shut kids down is to say, you're wrong, next, Bacon said. Instead, he offers words of encouragement if a student doesn't quite know the right answer. Even when they get answers wrong, I'm like, you know, that was a good guess, but that's not really the right answer. Can anyone help them out, he said, because oftentimes all it takes is just a little teamwork. Benzel started at the zoo in the Junior Zookeeper program as a high schooler before she was hired in 2015. Now she fosters a love of the natural world for students just like herself, coming full circle, she said. It is incredible. I wake every day having my dream job, Benzel said. Like I've always wanted to do this, and I just think I am so lucky and blessed. It's crazy. In other news, the outlook is grim for the swipe fee ban. Law Affects Credit Card Charges for Taxes and Tips by Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois, 2 hours ago. Illinois. Springfield. An Illinois law banning swipe fees on taxes and tips was already delayed twice by lawmakers and appears to be on life support after a federal judge that once permitted it issued a permanent injunction against it this week. U.S. District Judge Virginia Kendall issued the injunction just hours ago after the General Assembly approved a further 1 year delay to the Interchange Fee Prohibition Act. Subject of the ongoing credit card chaos advertising campaign before adjourning its spring session. It's the latest development in a years-long fight between retailers and financial institutions about a fee that's levied on every credit and debit card transaction. Each time a shopper swipes their credit or debit card, it sets off a complicated string of payments between banks. The retailer's bank pays an interchange fee, typically around 1 to 2% of the transaction cost, to the consumer's bank. The fees include both a set amount and a percentage of the transaction. But the credit card companies, namely Visa and MasterCard, control how they're calculated. The Illinois law would have prohibited financial institutions from applying the fee to the tax and tip portion of the bill. Banks and retailers have estimated it would affect $120 million to $200 million in revenue or more each year to the benefit of retailers and charging of the banks. Illinois would be the only place where such a law was implemented. The law was slated to take effect July 1st after already being postponed from its 2025 effective date. If Governor J.B. Pritzker signs the latest delay, its effective date would now be July the 1st of 2027. But it's Kendall's Monday ruling that cast the measure into further doubt. Judicial history. Kendall, in February, ruled that the law could take effect, based largely on her interpretation of administration rules written by the Federal Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, an independent subsection of the U.S. Treasury. Kendall had ruled that because the fees are set by third parties, the card companies, they're not preempted by the federal laws and regulations that give banks wide latitude to determine their own fees. But the OCC, in a pair of April filings, rewrote the language at question and issued an order specifically preempting Illinois' law. Although the OCC believes that Section 7.4002, the section discussed in the lawsuit, already allows national banks to impose fees that are set by a third party, the OCC is revising Section 7.4002 to make that explicit and resolve any uncertainty about the scope of the regulation. The agency wrote in the filing in direct response to Kendall's ruling. Read the filings. Preemption of Illinois law. Restatement of National Banking Act. At the time, the case was before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, but the court sent it back to Kendall for a reinterpretation of the new OCC filings. Addressing that charge, Kendall wrote this week, "It's obvious from the face of the new rule that the modified language tees up an express conflict with the IFPA." Ultimately, Kendall decided Illinois law is now preempted by the federal rules, at least as it pertains to national banks, federal savings associations, payment networks, and out-of-state banks. The Electronic Payments Coalition, the bank-backed entity that's been running the quote-unquote credit card chaos ads, welcomed the ruling, but they warned it further creates an unlevel playing field. Even with this decision, credit unions and Illinois chartered banks remain subject to IFPA, creating ongoing uncertainty and the risk of inconsistent treatment for parties in the same transaction, the group said in a statement. Kendall had previously issued a similar injunction on a portion of the law regarding data collection, applying it to only some financial entities. What happens next isn't immediately clear, but further judicial review is almost guaranteed, with both sides weighing their legal options. Legislative history and debate. The law was enacted 2 years ago at the behest of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Pritzker and lawmakers in 2024 agreed to raise about $101 million in revenue to plug a budget hole by putting a $1,000 monthly cap on the quote-unquote retailer's exemption, a tax break retailers claim for being the state's de facto sales tax collectors. Late in the legislative process, IRMA successfully lobbied for the long-sought tax tip exemption to alleviate the financial impact of the exemption cap for retailers. The financial institutions argue that the electronic payment system as it exists today can't segregate the tax and tip portion of a transaction, which could result in quote-unquote credit card chaos in Illinois if the law was to become effective. Instead of complying, according to the coalition's literature, the card companies could just stop processing cards altogether in Illinois. They could also stop processing tax and tip portions, or require two separate swipes for the subtotal in the tax and tip portion of the bill. Electronic payments rely highly on interconnected networks that require a uniform national standard, the Electronic Payments Coalition said in a statement. We will continue working through the courts and with policymakers to ensure that all participants in the payment system are treated consistently, so the customers they serve will also be protected from the harm IFPA will cause. But Rob Carr, president and CEO of IRMA, has forcefully disputed the chaos claim. This industry has had 2 years to figure this out. Instead of using their vast resources to solve problems, they're doing all they can to distract, distort, delay, and demonize, Carr testified in a House committee over the weekend. The Merchant Payments Coalition, a group of retailers and similar businesses that advocates on credit and debit card issues, argued the new rule gives financial institutions dangerously broad fee-setting authority. The revised language could apply broadly to numerous categories of consumer financial charges, including late fees, overdraft or over-limit fees, annual card fees, ATM fees, and similar charges, the MPC said in a statement. By eliminating the exception of independent competitive pricing, the rule risks encouraging industry-wide fee standardization at the expense of consumers and merchants alike. When Kendall said Illinois law is indeed preempted for certain institutions, she also faulted the OCC for using emergency authority to implement new rules, and she criticized the order specifically preempting Illinois law, writing that much of the logic contained in it, quote-unquote, perches atop the catch-all justification of how things are done around here. What the order's argument overlooks, however, is that the IFPA does not impede national banks' ability to participate in card networks, nor does it require them to engage in quote-unquote costly negotiations to maintain that participation, Kendall wrote. Instead, it reduces the portion of a transaction upon which a fee could be calculated. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundations. In other news, the Route 66 site wants a Black Haven. Oklahoma, Jonathan Bullington, Chicago Tribune, 2 hours ago. Luther, Oklahoma, it is, at a first glance, an unassuming building that stands along Route 66 in this central Oklahoma town. A bungalow with a gabled roof and a sandstone walls that are etched with the names of many visitors who stopped here over the past century. Look through the Reverend Alan Threat III's eyes, though, and something else comes into focus. We first meet the 86-year-old family patriarch at his church 10 miles west in Acadia. It's Father's Day, and the Sunday service includes a gift bag with cookies for the fathers. The pastor stands tall at the pulpit and reads from the Gospel of Matthew. Later at his grandfather's service station in Luther, he describes what others cannot see. He can see rows of cars parked along the famed highway and people streaming toward his grandfather's service station to buy a hot dog and a beer before walking across the street to catch a Negro Baseball League game. He can see his grandfather standing just outside the front door, neatly dressed in overalls, chomping a cigar and greeting everyone who pulls off of Route 66 for gas or food to spend the night because they heard they could take refuge at the Threat filling station. That's right here. It's a part of history. Black history, Threat says, sitting on a bar stool inside the station. This was their rescue place where they could stop and relax. Here you could stay all night if you wanted to. Route 66 is called America's Main Street, a moniker that fuels nostalgics who like to talk about simpler times and good days gone by. Of course, that wasn't always true for everyone. 44 of the 89 counties that touched the route were thought to compromise sundown towns, that is, places where black people were explicitly or implicitly told to leave before sunset, said Candace E. Taylor, an author and photographer who wrote about the highway in her book, Overground Railroad, The Green Book and the Roots of Black Travel in America. For black travelers, along Route 66, that put a vital importance on knowing where to find places listed in the Green Book, or places like the Threat filling station between long, perilous stretches of their journeys. The consequences were deadly if you didn't have a good plan, Taylor said. Alan Threat Sr. came from Alabama to Oklahoma around the turn of the 20th century. He sharecropped for a white farmer who eventually turned the land over to Threat, about 150 acres in total. Threat built a service station on the property in about 1915. After a fire destroyed it, he rebuilt it in 1933 using sandstone quarried from his farm. He eventually expanded its offerings into something that resembles the convenience stores and the dive bars of today. Along the west wall, shelves and cabinets that now hold t-shirts and other souvenirs once held canned goods, bread and produce for sale. A narrow bar separated the shelves from a pool table at the center of the pine floor opposite two booths. Outside, there used to be a pit maybe 10 feet deep filled with rattlesnakes. People would toss coins in the pit like a fountain at a shopping mall. Neither the Reverend Threat nor his cousin Edward Threat could remember how the coins were collected. In the field behind the station, the Threats set up tables with benches under lights strung between trees. A wooden platform served as a dance floor. A jukebox supplied the music. The crowds that came danced the jitterbug with such excitement on Saturday night that by Sunday morning, the Reverend Threat remembered, he and a cousin would find the platform littered with quarters and nickels that fell out of the dancers' pockets. Family stories tell of the filling station being visited by Joe Lewis and Pearl Bailey, of bank robber George, quote-unquote, babyface Nelson, hiding in a barn on the property. He's rumored to have told Threat Sr., "When I leave here, don't pay any attention to the direction I go." Threat Sr. died in December of 1950, and his son, Ulysses Grant Threat, took over the filling station until his death 6 years later. Ulysses Threat's wife, Elizabeth Hilton Threat, kept it running until she closed it in the mid-1970s. A school teacher, Elizabeth Threat was one of five students to integrate the University of Central Oklahoma. The library in Luther is named in her honor. She died in 2009 at age 98. The station was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1995. 20 years later, Edward Threat, whose father once ran a bar and restaurant next to the station, led his family's efforts to restore the building, aided by grants from the National Trust for Historic Preservation and other organizations. "It's been a labor to get all of this put back together again," he says. "A lot of time and a lot of money just to get where we are. Much of the interior is original, the pine floors and walls, the bar stools, and the counter. The cash register, also original, was returned after it was loaned to the Smithsonian Institute. The plan is to turn the station into an interpretive center where people can learn about the family's story and the stories of black travelers during Jim Crow. Edward Threat wants to reopen his father's restaurant and bar and call it Brown Bomber Bar and Grill. He can see an RV park on the property, perhaps near the pond, farther west of the station, which they could stock with fish. We don't want you to come here, buy a shirt, take pictures, and leave," he says. "We want this to be a destination." 2 months later, the station once again drew a crowd as the Threat family celebrated the installation of a 14-foot-tall monument to the building's significance on Route 66. Oh, how time flies. On June the 4th of 1926, readers who have been anxious about the Daily Pantograph's model home to be erected this summer will now be rewarded. The plans call for an early American home with colonial brick of dark red with white windows and white shutters. The home will be elevated to permit a garage in the basement with a side entry. 75 years ago, on June the 4th of 1951, Fellgate School Street entrance to the Illinois State Normal University campus has been moved about 50 foot north and restored. Because of the change was now the construction of the new administration building just inside the old gate site. 50 years ago today, in 1976, tired, happy runners finished a 200-mile trek that added about $200 to Abraham Lincoln Statue Fund. Parkside Junior High School students and two of their teachers were among the participants. The fund, which has reached about $10,000, is for a life-size statue for the McLean County Law and Justice Centers. 25 years ago today, in 2001, Rebecca Enderlin wiggled onto the great Emancipator's lap and stared into his eyes. It was the 9-year-old's first visit to the Abraham Lincoln bench on the grounds of the McLean County Museum of History. Since the bench was dedicated last July, about 5,000 people have visited it, said Greg Coos, executive director of the museum. It is not uncommon for youngsters like Rebecca to end up in Abe's lap, said Coos, adding that this is encouraged because the sculpture is meant to be interactive. Today's Flick Fact. Question. A fixture in the Twin Cities for 43 years, Alexander's Steakhouse in Normal has closed. But can you remember what occupied that College Avenue building before Alexander's? The answer. Until 1983, that's back when Ronald Reagan was in his first term, when an internet sounded more like a place to play tennis, and when we grumbled because gasoline had soared to $1.20 a gallon. The site was home to Showbiz Pizza Place. It featured an arcade and an animatronic band that was equal parts entertainment and nightmare fuel, depending on your age. Moving on now to some sadder news, we have an obituary for Christopher Odell, or C.G. Jones. He was born on December 21st of 1979 and died on April the 17th of 2026. Christopher Odell Jones, C.J., formerly of Bloomington, died April the 17th in Arlington, Virginia. C.J. was born December 21st of 1979 in Bloomington, the son of Odell and Ruby Jones. He was a graduate of Bloomington High School and Illinois State University. His celebration of life service will be 2 to 3:30 p.m. on Friday, June the 5th of 2026 at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church in Bloomington. Now we have a military spotlight for you. ISU cadet was awarded Sons of American Revolution Silver ROTC Medal by Olivia Jacobs 3 hours ago. Normal cadet Corey Urban recently received the Silver ROTC Medal from General Joseph Bartholomew Chapter of the Sons of the American Revolution. Urban is from the Illinois State University Redbird Battalion Army ROTC program. He received a $500 scholarship, certificate of recognition, and the chapter's commemorative challenge coin, symbolizing honor, service, and enduring military tradition of shared commitment and excellence. He was recognized during the battalion's annual change of command ceremony on April the 30th at ISU's Horton Fieldhouse. The Sons of the American Revolution has long honored the citizen soldier tradition that began with America's first patriots, said Jay Cummings, chapter president, in a news release. Cadet Urban reflects those same ideals of leadership, discipline, service, and love of country. Urban is an accomplished senior contracted cadet pursuing dual degrees in finance along with risk management and insurance with a minor in military science. He is expected to graduate in May of 2027. This fall, he will assume leadership of the ISU Redbird Battalion as commander. The SAR Silver ROTC Medal is presented annually to one cadet in each ROTC program based on demonstrated excellence in leadership, military bearing, scholarship, and overall performance, with the recipient nominated by the unit's commanding officer, according to a news release. Urban's military accomplishments include participating in 3 years of the Ranger Challenge Competition, Northern Warfare Training, Ranger Buddy Competitions, Air Assault School, service as opposing force during joint field training exercises at Fort Knox, and a U.S. Army JAG internship at Fort Forden. He has also served as a resident assistant, a member of Alpha Kappa PSI and Gamma Iota Sigma, and is an Inspire team coordinator for ISU's College of Business. Urban's award was presented by GJBSAR Veterans Committee members and compatriots Randy Boyd and Terry Willis. 41 years after receiving the same recognition as an ISU cadet, it was especially meaningful for Randy to help present this award to the next generation of military leadership, said Dale Simpson, public relations chairman, in the release. This chapter serves McLean and surrounding counties as a part of the National Society of Sons of the American Revolution, prompting patriotism, preserving American revolutionary history, and inspiring future generations. Moving on now to a calendar of events, you can check out our roundup of the latest special events, music, theater, nightlife, and kids events, and to submit an item, send an email to features@pantograph.com. Special events include Colonel's Collegiate League Baseball Matchup at 5 p.m., June the 4th, 6:30 p.m., June the 6th, and then 3 p.m. on June the 7th, 5 p.m. June the 10th through 11th, the Corn Crib at 1000 West Rab Road in Normal. Sweet Summer Pop-Up Shops from 4 to 7 p.m. on June the 4th, Lakeside Country Club, 1201 Croxton Avenue, Bloomington, and it's free entry and open to the public. June 1st, Friday Art Event from 4 to 8 p.m. on June the 5th, various locations in downtown Bloomington. Wags and Wishes, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. on June the 5th, the Doubletree by the Hilton, 10 Brickyard Drive, Bloomington, $75. Normal Corn Belters versus Illinois Valley Pistol Shrimp, Toy Story Night, 6:30 p.m., June the 5th, the Corn Crib at 1000 West Rad Road in Normal. Cruisin' Through the Century, celebrating 100 years of Route 66 in McLean County, is all day on June the 6th and 7th in Bloomington Normal, Shenoa, Funk's Grove, Lexington, and McLean and Towanda. Until next time, friends, have a great day, and I will be reading part 2 of the Pantograph here a little later. Thank you for joining us.